Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
Box office top 10 this week. At 10, Memoirs of a Geisha.
Perfectly fine, big, glitzy Hollywood production. Just don't get worried about its cultural heritage.
Number 9, Brokeback Mountain.
Which is, you know, hanging on in there and doing really fine, despite the fact that everybody has now started calling it the pun name, which I think you accidentally coined.
It was put in as a misprint, but stupidly I hadn't checked it and said Bareback Mountain. But I don't know if that was original or
I
just
put on
daft.
My Carhartt coat the other day and somebody went, oh, very good, gay cowboy look. So apparently it's gone into Chic as well.
It's a gay shepherd movie anyway. We've already established that. Derailed at 8.
It doesn't make any sense. Isn't directed by Adrian Lyne. Why on earth doesn't Jennifer Aniston just go back to TV where she belongs?
Number 7, Fun with Dick and Jane.
Dick, present, Jane, present, fun, sadly absent without leave.
You said that last week, but
I know,
say
but
it every week
still funny.
It works. Still works. Munich at 6.
You know, I don't get it. I think War of the Worlds is a better film. No, I don't get it. War of the Worlds is a better film. People have just been flummoxed by, oh, it's a political movie, we must take Uncle Steven seriously. Who, incidentally, he's been nominated for the Oscars on the basis of, oh, Steven's made a movie, we better nominate him or he'll take his ball away.
It's not going to be one of those Fridays where you start doing impressions again, is it?
That wasn't an impression. That was an illustration. Ah.
Number 5, Zathura, Space Adventure, Jumanji in Space. 4.
I took my kids to see it a couple of days ago. And the thing that I should point out, which I probably didn't point out at the first time I reviewed it, was it is possible for children to find this scary. They enjoyed it, but there was a whole bit with the Zorgons, which had never occurred to me that the Zorgons were in the slightest bit scary.
Are they bad?
I now have it on first hand. Believe me, they are sit on daddy's knee scary, okay?
Okay. Walk the Line at 4.
It's just fantastic, and I'm really sorry that Johnny Cash's daughter doesn't like it, but everyone else in the world does.
What does she know?
Yeah, exactly.
Big Mama's House at Big Mama's House 2. 2 at 3.
It's less funny than Big Mama's House 1.
This is confusing, because at 2, it's Final Destination 3.
3, which is actually more funny than Final Destination 1 and 2, and was a real surprise. It was a really enjoyable piece of rubbish.
And the UK's number 1, it being half term, and another half term for a lot of other people coming next week, is Chicken Little.
Which is kind of all over the place. I mean, the story with the rhyme is that Chicken Little thinks the sky is falling on his head in the cartoon, or it's a digital animation. The sky is falling on his head, so it turns into War of the Worlds. Well, if you want to see War of the Worlds, go and see War of the Worlds. Except, of course, if you have young children who aren't up to seeing War of the Worlds, in which case, and I'm thinking this even as I'm saying it, Chicken Little is a good option. And watch out for the Zorgons.
In Chicken Little?
No, they're not Zorgons. In Chicken Little, they're not Zorgons, they're tripods. I mean, it's weird, it's like they've literally wandered off the set of War of the Worlds and into Chicken Little.
Stephen Cumbernauld says, Simon and Mark, I'm not a doctor or a student of the evolution of species, Ella March of the Penguins and so on, but know a good movie when I watch one. Walk the Line is a masterpiece.
Yes, it is.
I was genuinely moved by the performances from Phoenix and Witherspoon. I've been a Cash fan for years and rate the album Johnny Cash at Folsom Prison as his best work. The movie captured the demons present throughout Cash's life. I haven't seen the Buddy Holly biopic, but if Mark rates it alongside Walk the Line, it might be worth viewing. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work. And that's Stephen. Don't forget, it's all on the podcast. You can live and enjoy every single moment of Friday afternoon. Again, just go to the 5Live website, follow all the details.
Can I just tell you, is it only me, or when somebody says Western Avenue, as they just have done, do you automatically think of Elvis Costello?
No.
Oh, OK. 5 miles out of London on the Western Avenue. Must have been a wonder when it was brand new.
Robin in Kent, as I was shopping in my local supermarket, I spotted The Corpse Bride on DVD for less than a tenner.
Wow, that's
and
a bargain.
Remembering the good doctor's favourable review, bought a copy. My family and assorted friends watched it 3 times in 3 days with all the extras. Great film, amazing stop-frame animation, beautiful lighting. Mark was, of course, right. It made me realise that there must be loads of Mark's previous films of the week coming out on DVD every week. I know it's not a DVD review slot, but it'd be very helpful when a good film is released on DVD for Mark to remind us that it's a good one.
Actually, we should do that. So let me off the top of my head say Monday, Wallace and Gromit and Curse of the Were-Rabbit is out on this double disc DVD set, which is absolutely fantastic. It's really, really good stuff. And you remember I raved about that Godzilla reissue? Mm-hmm. That came out on DVD last week. And if you never saw Godzilla in the original Japanese version, if you only ever saw it in that Bowdlerized version with Raymond Burr doing the sort of narration, get the BFI release of Godzilla. It's absolutely terrific. But Wallace and Gromit in Curse of the Were-Rabbit, which is going head-to-head with Tim Burton's Corpse Bride at the Oscars, because there's those two, and then Howl's Moving Castle in the Best Animated Feature category. And I think it's a really hard call. Personally, my vote would go for Wallace and Gromit. But it's, if you like Corpse Bride, you will love Wallace and Gromit and Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
Robin concludes with a contribution to our entertaining movie game.
Yeah.
Blood, blood, more blood, ear, they're all dead.
Well, if it's ear, then it's Reservoir Dogs.
It is,
but that's they're not all dead at the end, because the key thing is that that what's his name, the Steve Buscemi character, isn't dead. He lives.
What does he know? What does
Robin exactly know? Yes, good, but factually incorrect.
Just watch the movies before you send in emails. On that, just do this one from John Fletcher in Darlington, because it's quite good. Another movie entertaining game.
Yes. Okay? Another game?
Another movie for you to guess.
Okay.
Here's the clue. Sunday.
Sunday Bloody Sunday?
Nope.
Every day is like Sunday?
Nope. Where are we today? Friday. Your clue is Sunday.
48 hours?
Nope. The day after tomorrow.
Oh!
It's quite good, though.
Okay.
John, that's very good. He also says, P.S., you're wrong about The Doors. But anyway, let's not go there. Let's actually do a new review
so
of a new movie.
On one side, you and Camille Paglia. On the other side, me. I think I know which side I would go with. Me.
Amongst the new releases this week, Good Night and Good Luck.
The latest film by gorgeous George Clooney, who, of course, has demonstrated already that he's a bit of a whiz behind the camera, because he came on this programme, didn't he, with Thingy of a Dangerous Mind, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, which is great. This is his latest directorial outing. He also co-stars in it. It's up for several awards, including Best Picture and Best Actor, and I think both the BAFTAs and the Oscars. David Strathairn as the legendary American TV newsman Ed Moreau, who had a battle against Senator Joe McCarthy. I know I'm stating the obvious here, but if you don't know this, Senator Joe McCarthy was kind of the head of the McCarthy anti-communist witch hunts in America in the 1950s. There have been several films already made about this subject, but, you know, we could always do with another one. Shot in nostalgic black and white, and almost all set within the confines of the television station, in which Moreau and his team have editorial meetings, do their broadcasts, and then experience the fallout from those broadcasts. Not big on action, big on talking. Now, it's an interesting thing about Clooney, because he's also up for a Best Supporting Actor Oscar in Syriana, of which I was less fond. That comes out later on as Stephen Gagan, who I don't think is the world's greatest scriptwriter, but was famous for doing Traffic. This, to me, was a lovely film. I thought it was really engrossing and really intelligent. I loved the way it was shot, because people think it's easy to shoot in black and white. It's actually quite the opposite. It's harder to do really good black and white, and they do it beautifully. The attention to period detail is really, really great. Strathairn, I think, is a very strong contender for Best Actor, although obviously in most of the award ceremonies he's been up against, for example, Philip Seymour Hoffman as Capote, who won for Capote at the Golden Globes. And Philip Seymour Hoffman is terrific, and I think in the end he may well swing it. On the other hand, Joaquin Phoenix, who's absolutely great as Johnny Cash. It's a strange period at the moment. We're in an awards period for the first time in ages in which it's possible to look across a number of categories and say, you know, there are really three or four very, very strong contenders in each category. David Strathairn, however, is absolutely wonderful. And to some extent, he carries the film. He's this sort of rock-like, impassive character taking on this horrible spectre of Senator Joe McCarthy, who is played in the film by himself because they intercut newsreel of Joe McCarthy. Now, if, like me, you have a particular interest in the anti-communist witch hunts, you will find this absolutely engrossing. The question is whether people who aren't interested in that period enjoy it quite as much. Obviously, there is a political parallel with what's happening in America and news reporting today. I mean, one of the reasons that Clooney has chosen it, and Clooney's father was a newsman, and I think Clooney's father, didn't he have a bid to be an American politician, a failed bid to be an American politician? I may be making this up. I think he did. But don't sue me if he didn't. what the parallel is clearly that nowadays, in the wake of what's happened with the American foreign policy recently, American news in particular, I think we're looking at sort of Fox News Network for obvious reasons, have political prejudices that would not perhaps be true over here in England. I mean, here in England, we are very privileged to have, and I'm not just flag-waving here, we are privileged to have the BBC, who are probably the most famously unbiased news organisation in the whole world for very, very simple reasons. We're not accountable to anybody.
Is your contract coming up for negotiation?
Funnily enough, no. Oh. But so in America, they are much more used to having prejudicial news coverage. Of course, what's interesting is that in the case of the Moreau show, for one thing, his show was sponsored. It was sponsored by cigarettes that he smoked all the way through the shows, which, of course, nowadays looks terribly out of fashion, particularly since didn't we just ban smoking in public places, which, incidentally, I think is a good thing. But I don't smoke, so that's I'm just mentioning it in passing.
Are there any other big political controversies you'd like to comment on, like the education plans?
No. Comsat Angels ID just cards. Re-released their entire back catalogue on CD, and that's great news, but I don't think that's political. The point is that what he's doing is, some people have said that the movie is, it's a very easy thing to talk about McCarthyism because everybody understands that McCarthy, bad, freedom of speech, good. Well, it's not entirely true. There is, to some extent, at the moment, a kind of reappraisal of McCarthy in the same way there was a reappraisal of Nixon. I mean, it was unbelievable. You know, Nixon was this terrible crook. And then after his death, everyone started saying, well, actually, you know, he wasn't that bad. He recognised China and he ended up getting played by Anthony Hopkins in that movie, which, incidentally, I think is very good. In the case of this, what it says is, even then, the battle lines weren't as simply drawn as you think they might have been. The movie is bookended with Moreau giving a speech in which he basically says all newscasting is going to hell and we are losing the ability to make programmes about serious political issues. And this is back in 1958 that he's saying this. So it's got this kind of harbinger of doom quality about it. Now, I found that engrossing. In the supporting performances, there's a great supporting performance from Robert Downey Jr. And I'm now finding myself in a very uneasy position because for ages I absolutely hated Robert Downey Jr. He was completely out of control on screen and off screen, as far as I know. And every time he came on the screen, it was like just somebody showing off and shouting and bleating. And incidentally, I should complain about people showing off. But
And shouting and bleating.
But he suddenly seems to have reined it in. I like the way instead you just raised your eyebrows at somebody behind me in the control, as if I wouldn't notice when you did that. I know they're making gestures behind my back. That's fine. I'm not paranoid. I understand.
I have a visual dialogue the whole time with all the cast.
Robert Downey Jr. is really good. George Clooney, really good. David Strathairn, really, really good. Design, cinematography, really good. Overall, is it a masterpiece? Well, for me, it's engrossing and informative and intelligent, and it may not be the great vanguard of the alleged new intelligent Hollywood. I mean, yes, there are four or five movies coming that have got overtly political issues. I guarantee you this time next year we'll be up to our neck in monster movies and movies in which people dress up as fat people and fall over. It's all cyclical. It always has been cyclical. It just happens that at the moment we've got a few of them coming together. It's like buses. You know, you wait for ages, then three come at once. In this case, it happens to be four come at once. If you are interested in political dialogue, it's a real big hitter. If you're not, you may sit there thinking, why is this getting quite the acclaim it is? But then, if you're thick, then what can I do?
Sam, so anyone who disagrees with your assessment is thick, right? Okay, Sam in Kent.
But you say that sort of quizzically, like that's an odd thing to say.
I saw Good Night and Good Luck at a preview a couple of weeks ago. I have to say, contrary to most of the critics, I was rather disappointed.
Yeah,
it looks great, and the leads, Strathairn and Clooney, give very strong performances. However, it wasted the rest of a great cast. Why get someone as good as Patricia Clarkson and then give her so little to do? My other problem was that I felt it overused the archive footage, particularly of Joe McCarthy. I'd say that it's worth seeing for the lead performances and Clooney's direction, but I think critics are overrating it somewhat.
Well, that's a very balanced review, clearly by an intelligent listener.
Who happens to agree with you.
Well, no, he didn't, because what he said was that he thought it was a bit dull. But I think it does depend on you being interested in this particular subject matter. I think that's the key to it. And it's not going to win over a hugely wide audience. But it's really good that George Clooney, who has a fantastically popularist platform, you know, because all women want to be with him and all men want to be him, allegedly. It's really good to see him taking on serious subject matter. Where do you stand on George Clooney? Do you think he's handsome, right?
This, yeah, I think
this
he's
question
handsome,
to
yeah.
Sophie Benson.
I think he's very handsome.
And you, Simon?
I think he's gorgeous.
Yeah,
yes.
Gorgeous George.
Okay,
so I think that's a thumbs up. Well, he's not Richard Gere gorgeous, but he is.
He's a lot better.
No, the difference between him and Richard Gere is
Richard Gere's a dog in comparison.
No, the difference between him and Richard Gere is he's good looking on the outside and intelligent on the inside. Richard Gere, good looking on the outside, absolutely thick as two short planks on the inside.
This from Gary.
Allegedly.
Gary in Daytona, Florida. Mark, I hate to disagree with you on Reservoir Dogs, but if you turn the sound up at the end of Reservoir Dogs, you can hear the cops outside surround Steve Buscemi, tell him to drop his gun, and then shoot him.
Really? Is that really true?
Yes, says Gary in Daytona. I'm speaking for him now. I've never met him, but he...
Is that really true?
You mean you never knew?
No, I never knew. That's like saying at the end of Citizen Kane, it turns out to be an aeroplane. No, is that really true?
Well, how do I know? I haven't got it here, and Gary is just sending an email.
This is like everything you know is wrong.
You can't correspond with an email.
No, but he'll now send in an email saying, yes, it is true, or no, it's a gag. I don't know. It's like somebody was sending an email saying there's an Exorcist joke in the Piglet movie when there wasn't.
Julian in Devon, I don't know what's more sad, that there's a website devoted to Mark or that Mark checks it out.
I think we're equally sad.
David on this, I'm sorry, I wanted to say me and the missus watched Wolf Creek the other night and the boy Kermit was spot on.
Good.
It's a wicked film. Russ, Simon and Dr. K, I heard two people discussing Chicken Little over the water cooler this morning. One, a 40-year-old dad who'd taken his kids. He said he didn't enjoy it, but said, I'm sure it would have been okay if I was seven, which is perhaps the problem in a nutshell and why Disney needs Pixar. Show me an adult who doesn't love Toy Story or Monsters, Inc.
Mm.
So is that fair comment?
It is very fair comment. That's exactly the problem with it, is it doesn't play. I mean, doesn't, for example, like Wallace and Gromit, satisfy everybody. The Wallace and Gromit movie satisfies, I don't care how old you are, it's really funny. Whether it's people hitting each other over the head with frying pans or laughing at the jokes about may contain nuts, it's really funny. Or the Nun wrestling magazine, which I only noticed on the second time round.
Kieran in Belfast, should Clooney have cast himself, Mark? I think his presence distracts from the great cast around him.
No, I think he underplays it nicely, and I think that's wrong.
You can now stop sending your hundreds of texts and emails saying, yes, that's absolutely right. It is exactly as our emailer suggested, and that indeed Steve Buscemi does die.
Well, I never knew that, and you learn something new every day. All I remember at the end is him walking out with that Lion in the Bucket Ducket Ducket Dump song, and so I am really thrilled to have learnt a new thing, and I apologise profusely for saying that that other thing was wrong about They're All Dead. I'm just astonished.
Chris in London, sorry, you're going to get hundreds of these. Sorry. But according to Quentin Tarantino, Mr. Pink survives but is arrested by the police. In the background, policemen can be heard ordering Pink to put his hands on the ground. Then Pink says, I give up, after a brief firefight in which he is wounded but not killed.
Oh, in that case, I take the apology back.
This is revealed in the special edition of the DVD. So it's now very confusing.
So he's not dead, he's alive. So my previous thing stands, but I still didn't know any of that about the...
So if you didn't get the special edition, you probably think, like many of our very... You could tell there's a certain smugness to the emailers, you know, because they found something that you didn't know.
Yeah, even though they're wrong.
And if you get the special edition, you discover that he's injured and not killed.
Yeah.
OK, thank you, Chris in London, for that email. John in London, back on our movie game. Lazy lawyer, randy lawyer, conspiracy lawyer, jailed lawyer, beach.
Do it again.
Lazy lawyer, randy lawyer, conspiracy lawyer, jailed lawyer, beach.
Oh, I don't know.
He's just given up. You can't be bothered. Body heat.
Lynn
in Lauderdale, Minnesota. It's
enough.
Not Murrow. It's Murrow. Please pronounce it correctly.
Murrow.
There you go. That's another request.
Okay, and if you could take that out you can, in the podcast, you can cut it back in again, probably. We'll change it in the podcast anyway.
Simon, will you and you and Mark stop calling films movies? You'll be calling taps faucets and footpaths sidewalks next.
I like to call them the flicks, but apparently that doesn't mean anything. And the last time I said bespeaks, you told me off.
Well, that's just because it's pompous and ridiculous.
Do Casanova?
Go on.
Charming, apparently. I don't think so. It's this sort of utterly flimsy and borderline bawdy romp that can't decide whether it's a comedy or a drama and ends up being something of a farce and a little bit tragic to boot. Stars Heath Ledger, who is up for Best Actor of Brokeback Mountain, who is great in Brokeback Mountain. In this, goes back to the stuff that he used to do with The Knight's Tale of being... You know, basically a bit of cheesecake, you know, walking around with lots of flowing hair, looking very handsome and doing not very much. As Casanova, giving a lot of trouble to everybody, including the Venetian Doge, played by Tim McKinnon, or Ed Murrow. Well, he ain't going to be troubling any award ceremonies with this. Heath Ledger is clearly enjoying himself, which is fine, although all his key scenes are stolen by Omid Jalili, who is a stand-up comedian of this parish, who's very funny and gets all the best lines in the movie and delivers some of the less good lines with enough panache to make them look like really, really great lines. So all the time that Omid Jalili's on screen, the movie really comes alive. All the time that he's off screen, you think this is falling down a little bit. There's some cameo roles, like Jeremy Irons is this incredibly camp inquisitor, and Jeremy Irons is always worth the price of admission because he does Jeremy Irons, and that's what he does, and he does it rather well, and I like him, but it's not really enough, is it? The big problem is that the twist of the film is, you know the Casanova story, of course, yeah. Casanova, big ladies man.
In broad sweeping terms, I do. Yeah.
Yes, and in this version, which incidentally, there have been stuff saying that very, very famous scriptwriters have had a hand in polishing this script. Well, I have to say they haven't polished it very hard, because it has gags like Casanova takes a pig to somebody's house and they open the door and say, ah, you know, the pig must stay outside, but we'll take the animal, ba-boom. And there's another bit with somebody in a coach, and the coach is rattling around, and they say, this is the last time I travel coach. I mean, it's not really that funny. But the main problem it has is that it's sort of attempting to balance its male hero with a female heroine who is intelligent, strong, feisty, enigmatic, able to stand her own ground, and much, much more than a pretty face. Problem, played by Sienna Miller. None of those things. She's just a clothes horse. And you go, I'm sorry, if you're going to write that part, can't you give it to a good actress? I mean, surely that would help your cause. It sort of rather undercuts it when
she's
it's
very
Sienna
beautiful.
Well, Richard Gere's very beautiful. Doesn't mean he can act.
I'm just trying to help her out.
Well, sorry, you are backing the losing horse there. In the end, what you get is a lot of shots of Venice when you think, you know, Venice looked a lot more enigmatic in Don't Look Now. In fact, Venice looks a lot more enigmatic in Ian Softley's Wings of the Dove, which is much more recent. Venice always looks enigmatic, but somehow Lasse Hallström, who's the guy who directed My Life is a Dog, which somebody said wrongly, my film is a dog. I actually quite like My Life is a Dog, but Lasse Hallström is a little bit uneven. You think, well, yeah, if I took a movie camera to Venice, I could get some nice shots of Venice. And anyway, this doesn't look particularly great. It looks like a wet place that's sinking, which it is. And there's lots of people walking around in wigs, lots of people storming into rooms and going, ha-ha-ha, and then storming out of rooms and every now and then saying, I wish I hadn't travelled coach. And after about 40 minutes of it, you think, OK, I've got the measure of this movie. It's not Fellini, is it? It's not Brokeback Mountain, is it? It's just a bunch of people in frocks and wigs being a bit witty and not witty enough to keep up with Omid Jalili.
Andrew, in Tooting Beck, totally agree with Mark about Good Night and Good Luck. Saw it in New York last year. Saw it again the other day. It's lost none of its power. Some quality performances, particularly from David Strathairn.
As David Strathairn as Ed Morrow.
But he should lose out on the Oscar because Philip Seymour Hoffman is little short of superb.
I think that's
Capote.
Right, actually. I think that is right. I think Philip Seymour Hoffman will take it. And believe me, his performance as Capote is uncanny.
This on... this on Casanova from John. A really enjoyable French farce with some wonderful sporting roles from Lena Olin, Oliver Platt and Jeremy Irons. Almost as good as Chocolat, in the opinion of John.
Oh, but Chocolat was stinkola, wasn't it? Chocolat. It was like wading through chocolat.
Tony says, one of our movie game things. It's not very interesting. Could you ask Mark, please, about Greyfriars Bobby?
Mm-hmm.
We missed the review last week, thanks to nice Tony Blair. You remember we were poised all the way through last Friday, waiting for the words from the Prime Minister.
Mm.
Then when we joined his speech, he made no sense at all, because there was lots of in-jokes for the Labour Party faithful.
Yeah, lots of in-jokes and making no sense. Where have I heard that before?
Anyway, I was in a pivotal role, says Tony, in the movie Greyfriars Bobby. I was townsperson 298 and someone's feet as well. I know it's dull rubbish, but I missed Mark mauling it. So, for those who didn't hear it and they haven't got the podcast via the website, Greyfriars Bobby, Mark?
Well, the two problems. One of them is that they got the wrong dog, because the dog that they've got is more picturesque but is not what Greyfriars Bobby is. And the second one is, if you are third crowd person from the left and a pair of feet, you'll have more reason to go and see the film than anybody else, because it is, in the end, a film about a dog that sits on somebody's grave for an awfully long time until Christopher Lee says, here are the keys to the town. And that's it.
There you go. Well, that doesn't really count as a mauling, Tony, and I'm sure your role was particularly excellent.
Yeah, I did say in some of those crowd scenes, those feet are really
terrific.
Good.
Expat Tony says, greetings from Seattle. Usually I agree with Mr. Kermode on almost all things, but can you please tell him to stop calling male actors cheesecake? Cheesecake is reserved for females.
No, it's not.
Stop. The male equivalent of cheesecake
beefcake.
Is beefcake.
No.
For example, hang on, he hasn't finished. I.e., Jessica Alba in Fantastic Four is cheesecake. Heath Ledger in Casanova is beefcake. It's driving me mental.
Sorry, don't know your gay theory. Beefcake is butch good-looking men. Cheesecake is not butch good-looking men. Arnold Schwarzenegger, beefcake. Richard Gere, cheesecake. Jean-Claude Van Damme, balm cake.
I think you basically need to put your this kind of dictionary of gay slang up on the website just in case people aren't as familiar with it as you clearly are.
I'm not saying
anything. Where did you get it from, then?
Well, it's queer theory, but, I mean, look, it is definitely
queer
true.
Queer theory? Where do you get the queer theory from?
Because, I'm interested in film studies.
And is that a subsection of film studies?
Yes, of queer, course. Queer yes, theory. Of course it is. Of course it is a very important
it's
section of film
it
studies. It's a very, very important section of film studies. I should lend you some books about it.
No.
It is true that actresses were originally referred to as cheesecake, but you will find, I don't know what it's like in America, but over here the delineations work like that. Cheese and beef refer to different methods of butchness.
Right. OK, you know those books?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want
you
them.
Don't want them.
No. OK, what's this? This is Barry. On this, Barry Aitken. Talk, 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 introduce movie clip. No clip. Talk, 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 introduce clip. Talk, talk, exorcist, talk.
The podcast.
Yes, it is indeed the podcast. And Barry says, which incidentally I love so much, I really try not to take a Friday afternoon off. Available from the website. Let's get it in the top 10. He says, P.S., have you listened to Walk the Line soundtrack on CD? It goes to show how good Phoenix is at copying Cash's mannerisms. In movies, Johnny Cash. On CD, he's actor singing. actually, I think the CD is really good. We haven't done Aeon Flux. Give us some Charlie's Theron, then.
Staggeringly badly reviewed in America, Charlize Theron attempts to save the world, the futuristic world, from a dynasty who are repressing people's freedoms, blah, 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 blah. The New York Post says, by far the worst movie of the year. The Atlanta Journal says, as much fun as acid reflux, boom, and if you will. And several people have pointed out that it is to Oscar winner Charlize Theron what Catwoman was to Halle Berry. Cost, $55 million. Took, I think, $25 million or something like that in the States. So it is officially a thumbs down from everybody. Can it possibly be as bad as everyone says? Well, the bad news is that in the future, most of the Earth's population has been wiped out. The few remaining Earth population now live in terribly repressive society in which they have no freedom of thought, no freedom of action, no freedom of movement, and ruled over by a dynasty. So that's all bad. The good news is, however, that they all appear to get their clothes from the Skin2 online catalogue with a little bit of underwear thrown in by Agent Provocateur. And even when they are punching each other in the face, they remember to wear high heels because, hey, it's important that your butt looks good whilst you are fighting the revolution. So, hey, it's not all bad in the future. Second thing is, this is the second movie this month to star Charlize Theron and Frances McDormand. The other one is North Country, which starts out terribly worthy and then takes a real nosedive and is awful after that. And there's a really unintentionally funny bit when they drag Frances McDormand into court in a wheelchair in a moment which is meant to be I, Spartacus, but is like, I don't believe it. This is more fun than North Country. It's like The Matrix, but with the cleverness taken out. And that's a lot of cleverness to take out.
Who's Aeon Flux?
She's Aeon Flux and her sister.
Aeon.
She's Aeon Flux and her sister is Uma. Or Una, or Onky.
Well, that's stupid as well.
It's completely... So they're all called things like Throng and Hibbit and Padang. You know, it's like Lord of the Rings. And the plot doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Also, the plot is that it's yet another movie that the plot is ripped off Robert Fiveson's The Clonus Horror. Remember we had The Island recently, that Ewan McGregor movie, in which they said, you know, from an original script, but it's not original at all. It just took the Robert Fiveson movie that cost less than $1 million and remade it for $55 bazillion and made it into a stupid movie that was twice as long and had more glitzy effects. Well, this is the same film. If you don't see the end result coming, it's simply because you were too busy looking at everybody's bottoms running around in latex. I mean, it is stupid. It's laugh out loud stupid. The question of how much it knows that it's stupid is really the issue. I don't believe that anyone is taking it seriously, particularly not Pete Postlethwaite, who turns up at the end dressed...
He's not in latex, is he?
No, he turns up dressed as a worm. Everyone else gets to wear this really cool bondage gear and run around like dominatrixes. And then Pete Postlethwaite comes up and he's literally dressed up as a great big worm.
I'd rather him dressed as a worm than in latex, frankly.
I don't know, there's that quite interesting movie in which Pete Postlethwaite runs around pylons without
cheesecake
any clothes
or beefcake?
Oh, but he's definitely cheesy. Cheesy cake, yes. The older cheesecake. But anyway, so it's...
Older cheesecake.
Older cheesecake. It's directed by Karen Kusama.
What a horrible thought.
Yes, but I like Pete Postlethwaite, although he is bad in The Constant Gardener. And he does his best here. The woman who directed this directed Girl Fight, which was actually quite an interesting movie. This has no directorial stamp on it whatsoever. It's based on a cartoon serial, which I haven't seen, but I imagine that cartoon serial makes some more sense than this does. But it's absolute rubbish. But it's entertaining enough rubbish. It's quite short. It's visually a whole bunch of riffs taken from The Matrix. Sophie Okonedo is on screen for very little time, which is a bit of a shame because she's really great. Charlize Theron manages to keep a dead straight face, which she really has to be given some credit for. But it's total nonsense. But it's more fun nonsense than North Country.
Seems a long way from Monster, then, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's I think one of the reasons that it's happened is that her agent said, you know what, Charlize, in Monster, you look really sort of craggy and ugly. And, you know, in North Country, you look really craggy. We should do a movie that says, hey, look, she looks really great in Lycra. I mean, that's the whole point of the film. The camera chasing people around in Lycra going, look how well they've been trained. They must have really worked out their abs and their dabs and their bits and their bots, you know. It's a bodybuilding movie in latex.
McLibel is also out this week.
Can I quickly do Feed? Because these two stick together very nicely.
You can do what you want.
Okay, Feed. It's a horror movie from Brett Leonard, who made The Lawnmower Man and Virtuosity. And the poster, here are the quotes, say, cannibalism, obesity and gratuitous sex. Disgusting, Zoo magazine. Zoo says it's disgusting. I mean, how disgusting do you have to be for that? Stomach-churning, total film, vile front. It is true that I rarely see films that make me feel actually physically ill. And in the case of Feed, which I don't think is a great or an interesting or a good or a likeable or a watchable film at all, the one thing that you have to have going for it is revolting. It's an internet serial killer movie about a guy who feeds women, and they become very, very fatally obese. And that's the plot. And it's sadistic and nasty. And the stuff going for it is that it has got a quite convincing fat suit, which is interesting for about 2 minutes and then not interesting at all. If you had a problem, as I did, with that scene in 9.5 weeks when Mickey Rourke throws the entire contents of his fridge at Kim Basinger, believe me, you are going to not even last the first 5 minutes. And you sit there thinking, being on set with this film, making this film, why? I mean, didn't everyone just look around every now and then and go, you know, this is just horrible. So it does what it sets out to do. It genuinely made me feel ill. I don't think in a good way, though. Interesting double bill with that and McLibel, which is a documentary about these two guys who took on McDonald's. They published a leaflet that said a whole bunch of things about McDonald's. McDonald's sued them. They went to court. And you may have seen a television version of this documentary, which ended up with McDonald's winning. Then they took their case to the European Court of Human Rights. And they then won at least some of their case at the European Court of Human Rights. It's directed by Franny Armstrong, and the drama stuff in it is done by Ken Loach. And it sounds terribly worthy, but I introduced it at the London Children's Film Festival. They had a discussion afterwards with, you know, young members of the audience who come along to see it. It's a terrific piece of work. It's really interesting. It's out very briefly in the cinema in this expanded form and then onto DVD. And it's really, really good. It's a real David and Goliath struggle. And you end up, when they're waiting for the European Court ruling to come in, really edge-of-your-seat stuff. It's terrific.
Yes, edge of the seat and European court hasn't normally gone together. In
no, it hasn't.
Here it is for a first. Now, here's an interesting email. James Brown said, what?
No, that's very good. Edge of the seat and European court, sorry.
Just seen an advert for the forthcoming movie The Matador, in which its builders, and I quote, I've seen this, probably the funniest thing that Pierce Brosnan has ever done. It's a quote from the Evening Standard. I'm no expert, says James.
But
I wondered if your esteemed colleague, Dr. Kermode, could pick out all those other classic Brosnan comedies against which this is being compared. And can I just say, before you answer this, that Pierce Brosnan is on the programme next week.
The scene in which Tuesday. He walks through the hotel lobby wearing nothing but black pants and cowboy boots is the funniest thing he's ever done. But you're right, that is rather like saying of Nuns on the Run, which was described as the best anti-clerical transvestite comedy of the year, which it was.
So, Pierce Brosnan on the programme on Tuesday. I don't think you've upset the apple cart too much. Movie of the week.
Well, good night and good luck. But if you just want a bit of big, dumb, stupid fun...
Yes?
Eon Flux is not the worst movie of the year.
You can follow far more developments in Movie World via the website. And if you'd like to download the podcast, you can get all the details on the 5 Live website, bbc.co.uk/5live. It's on iTunes as well. Mark, thank you. See you next week. We're back on Monday at 1 o'clock, and drive is next. Have a great weekend.